Recording now, so go ahead.
All right, good morning or good afternoon wherever you are in the world, and welcome to our Polar Connect event. We're really excited. This is, I think, our second event with Arctic Polar Trek Teachers of the Year. We are with Andre Willey, and he will introduce us to his research team in a little bit. They're looking at ground squirrels up in Tulik Field Station, which is north of Fairbanks, Alaska. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. Today is June 5th, 2014, and like I said at the beginning, we are really excited to have you here. A few things before we get to the presentation you need to know about our platform that we're using. It's called Blackboard Collaborate, and Sarah did a little bit of introduction to some of the people that logged on early. But basically, the slides shall be showing up in the center of your screen. And to the left of the screen, there's a list of participants. You can probably find your name in there, as well as see it that Andre, myself, Janet, and Sarah are near the top. There's also a chat room where you can type in your questions, say hello to Andre and the team, all that kind of stuff, and let us know if you're having some trouble as well. If you have a question as we go along, you can click on the little hand icon above the list of participants, and that's like raising your hand and letting us know you have a question, and we can call on you. If you're using VoiceOver IP this morning, to talk to us, you'll need to click on the talk button, which is above the list of participants. You click it once to open the mic. When you're done talking, please click it again to close the mic. The Andre and the team might have some video today, and we might get to see their faces and see their special guests, but the rest of us will not have video. So just letting you know that it's just going to be a one-way video feed today. And like Sarah said at the beginning and was sharing with others, this this event will be archived, and it does take us a little bit to archive it, and we'll try to push out that link as soon as we have the archive and send it out to everybody that's registered. And I think that's it for that particular slide. We want to know who's out there. It's hard sometimes doing these virtual presentations, and especially when we don't have video involved. So please share with the group who you are, where you're from, if you're at a school, and if you've got students or adults participating with you. We know that Andre's school is there, but that's just Sarah and I know that, not everybody else. So please share with the group where you are and use the chat areas to do that. So please introduce yourself at any time here. Moving forward, Andre's in Tulik Field Station and in Alaska because he's participating in a program called Polar Trek Teachers and Researchers Exploring and Collaborating. And this is a National Science Foundation funded program. We get funding to place teachers with researchers like Corey Williams out in the field. And they get the teachers get to have any range of experiences. Andre will talk about his. We put over this year we've got over 12 teachers, or actually 14 teachers, 7 in the Arctic and 7 in the Antarctic this year. So it's a really exciting program, and Sarah and I and others have been running it for quite some time, and it's been really successful. And we hope that you'll share this program with other teachers that you know. At about questions, and I know this came up earlier, so how do you do questions? So during the presentation, the best way is really to type your question in the text box and just let us, we'll share that and relay that to the team that's presenting. And at the end of the presentation, you need to raise your hand with the hand button. We'll call you, and then when it's your turn to talk, press that talk button. Speak loud and clear, and unclick it when you're done. I forgot to mention that if you're calling in by phone, you need to *6 your mute your phone, or unmute your phone. And I think that's it. Any questions thus far, or Sarah? Anything that we missed?
I think we're all good. People in the chat box are letting us know where they are. So they're all over the country, and one of the classrooms said they want to see a squirrel.
All right, excellent. So with that, I think we're ready to turn it over to Andre and the team, if you guys are ready.
We're ready, anytime. Okay.
All right, well, we'll turn it over to you, and if you're going to push your slides, we'll just let you do it. The slide you should be seeing is your is your title slide, Arctic Ground Squirrel Studies.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody.
All right.
And I've got Team Squirrel here with me. And we've got Kate Wilsterman and Corey Williams, myself, and we have a new person on the team, Victor Chong. And I don't have a picture of him yet, but he's here live, so that's even better. These guys, I'm going to let them just briefly introduce themselves. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Corey Williams. I'm a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Alaska Anchorage, which basically means I have a research position, and I'm one of three primary investigators on the Arctic Ground Squirrels Circadian Rhythms Project.
Hi guys, I'm Victor. I'm a student at the University of Illinois, and I'm this year's REU student, which stands for Research Experience for Undergrads, which is kind of like an opportunity for undergraduates in college to get an opportunity to go out and do an independent research project, and I'm lucky enough to do it here in Alaska.
And I'm Kate Wilsterman, and I'm currently working as a lab tech for Corey Williams. Last summer, I was also an REU student, and I just graduated from Bucknell University, which is in Pennsylvania, and I'm starting at UC Berkeley in the fall as a graduate student, hoping to get my PhD in biology.
Great, thanks, Team Squirrel. So I thought I'd show you guys some slides of our activities here and some of the wildlife we're seeing. But we're going to start off just with life at Tulik. It might be kind of hard to imagine what it's like up here in the Arctic Circle, but we've got a really nice large field camp. You can kind of see there's a number of buildings. There's several laboratories. There's a dining hall. And then I sleep in one of these Winter Haven tents, which is actually pretty comfy. It's got Wi-Fi and it's got electricity. It's got a little heater in there, and it's shared with another person in the back, although the cabins are separate. Some of them are more dormitory style with a couple people in the same cabin. Each day we take our truck out about 15 miles up the Dalton Highway to our field site, which is at a place called Adigan River. And so we load up all our gear and head up. I don't know if you can see our decorations on the back of the window there. We've got our Team Squirrel pictures and whatnot. When I was coming up here, it was pretty exciting, the drive up. It's about a 7 hours drive north from Fairbanks. And there's basically one road in Alaska that goes north to the Arctic Circle, and it's called the Dalton Highway, and it follows the Alaska Pipeline, which comes from Prudhoe Bay, where there's a bunch of offshore oil drilling rigs that pump oil down to Valdez, and so we followed that along the way. It crosses over the Brooks Range of mountains, which was pretty amazing. And then when we got here, the picture in the upper left is kind of the open tundra right around the Tulik Research Station. So it's fairly flat where we are, where we're actually living, but we kind of go up into the foothills at the base of the Brooks Range for our field site. Along the way, some of the things I was noticing, and actually before I left, because springtime was coming, was just the greening up at home, and then I came up here, and we're probably 3 or 4 weeks behind up here. So some of the trees are just barely starting to leaf out. Some of the flowers are starting to bloom, but very few. And most of the pictures that you see, it's pretty gray, but I think this week it's going to really change because everything is starting to leaf out and the grass is starting to green up. So we're right in the middle of the change. Biologically, when you're looking at the timing of different events, it's called phenology. So there's phenology in terms of the plants. And one of the cool things that happens up here is the caribou migrate through. So we found some caribou antler sheds at one of our field sites. We only saw one caribou because they've already moved through this area. They go north further up towards the Arctic Ocean, and so hopefully we'll get to see some of those if we go up further north, but there aren't really any caribou around here right now. It'll be really nice when it starts to green up, I think. So one of the things that's amazing up here is that it's really pretty similar to home in Colorado. A lot of the same animals live here, and but they're not the same species of that animal. So like at home we have ground squirrels, but they're not Arctic ground squirrels. They're a smaller version. We've got Richardson's ground squirrels, for example. This little bird here is a little phalarope. They migrate through and spend the winters in Colorado. There's a caribou in the background on this one slide. We don't have caribou, of course, in Colorado, but we have elk, which are kind of similar. They occupy a kind of a similar niche and habitat, in a sense. The wildflowers up here are pretty strange. This one's called a woolly lousewort, and it's all covered with fur to kind of protect the flowers from freezing. So it's pretty unique, pretty cool stuff. Looks like my picture of the doll sheep is not showing up on the PowerPoint for some reason. But in Colorado, we've got bighorn sheep, and there's doll sheep up here, which are basically a white version of bighorns. One of the animals that we have not yet seen yet are grizzlies. I was lucky to be up in Alaska last summer, and I saw these grizzlies and took these pictures up in Denali National Park. But they're around here. Somebody saw a grizzly yesterday just north of here that was eating a caribou carcass. And we've seen tracks of grizzlies along the river. So they're definitely around, but they're not common to see here. Grizzlies, like the picture says, love ground squirrels. I watched this one chasing ground squirrels, and it actually was able to dig one of the ground squirrel burrows up, and it's got a ground squirrel in its mouth going off for a little snack. So there are definitely a lot of predators that go after these ground squirrels. And we haven't really seen that. We did see a fox one day, I guess, which was cool. We just saw him for a second. But there's eagles also chase after the ground squirrels. The foxes, the bears. Looks like a few of these slides are not showing up for some reason. So I'm going to skip ahead.
This is Sarah. I saw doll sheep. I'm looking at grizzlies right now. The delay might be because of video. See alpine tundra versus Arctic tundra.
Yeah, so they're showing up on your end, all right? Do you have the doll sheep now?
I did see a doll sheep. It was the white animal with a lot of rocks for people who are seeing that one. If anybody else is missing slides, just type in the chat box and let them know. Right now, I see a doll sheep now.
Okay, good. So it's just a timing issue, maybe.
I think it might be. So if you want to just make sure the slides come up, it could be that you turn off video for a minute.
I'll give that a try. That'll be more fun to look at.
Okay.
All right. So back home, we have alpine tundra, and I try to spend a lot of time up in the alpine tundra, but it's a little bit different up here in the Arctic, and the reason that you have alpine tundra is because you go up in altitude, and at high altitudes, you get above tree line, and so large trees can't really grow, and the habitat's really similar to the Arctic tundra that one encounters if you go north to a really high latitude. And once you get above about 66 degrees north latitude, that's the Arctic Circle, that marks where you can get 24 hours of daylight in the summer, and of course 24 hours of nighttime in the winter. And above that point, it gets pretty cold, and the winds and whatnot make it so it's impossible for trees to grow there. Also, there's permafrost, so the ground is frozen about 6 inches to a foot underneath the surface, and so trees can't get their roots to go down and penetrate the soil very deep. So one of the cool things I thought is that we have ptarmigan at home, and there's a lot of ptarmigan up here too, but there are different species of ptarmigan. We have white-tailed ptarmigan in Colorado and in the Rockies, and up here there's a couple kinds of ptarmigan. There's rock ptarmigan and there's...
I do not hear Andre's voice. Do people hear Andre?
You're not hearing me? All right.
Okay, keep going. We're in a kind of storm down here.
Okay, you're hearing? Okay, it's like everybody's... Some of the people are hearing me at least. Well, I'll keep going on the ptarmigan anyway. I love ptarmigan. Ptarmigan are awesome. But the thing that's great about them is you can sneak up on them and get pictures of them, and they're not too afraid of people. A lot of times they sneak up on you because you can't see them. They're so well camouflaged. You can see the female ptarmigan is the one that's in the brown, and the male is the white one. And the females are really well hidden. So we'll move on to something else. The star of the show are ground squirrels. And these guys are a lot of fun. They're amazing, cute little animals, but they are incredibly tough. To be able to survive up here is quite a challenge. And so they've got some really neat adaptations that we're going to talk about for a minute. But they're one of the few animals that can live up here year-round. And so it really takes some special adaptations to be able to pull that off. And their main strategy is to hibernate. You know, a lot of other animals that spend the summer up here, they just migrate in when the weather's nice, and then they leave during the winter when it's cold and dark. And the squirrels actually stick around. A few other animals not only stick around, but they're active in the winter, and that's maybe even more of a challenge. Some animals like musk oxen, for example. And anyway, with the hibernating ground squirrels, the thing that's amazing that allows them to be able to do that is they go into their burrows, and they allow their body temperatures to cool down to negative 2.9 degrees, which, you know, ice cubes form at 0 degrees, so they're colder than an ice cube. And in this one picture, I'm holding one of them with Jeanette Moore, who's actually online here. Thanks, Jeanette. And it feels like holding a little fur ball that's an ice cube, a fur-covered ice cube, maybe. It's pretty incredible. But they do that to save energy. So they don't have to spend any energy while they're hibernating, trying to stay warm. But it's a little tricky, because if they got too cold, they would freeze solid, and they couldn't get too much colder than negative 2.9 degrees. That's about the limit of any animal. In fact, it is the coldest known hibernating mammal that that we know about. So pretty incredible. Normally, the tissues would freeze solid even at that temperature, let alone if it got even just a little bit colder. So they're living kind of right on the edge, right on the extreme limit of being able to cope with that kind of temperature. I'm going to let our principal investigator, Corey Williams, talk a little bit about some of the science behind this. And we'll do a little bit of heavy science here. We've got some graphs to try and interpret here and see what's going on as these guys hibernate. Corey, if you want to jump in there.
Sure. So this graph you're looking at here has one dark solid line, and that is the body temperature of a male Arctic ground squirrel. And then below that you see a dashed line, and the dashed line is the temperature of the soil at a meter depth, which is the depth of their hibernacula. So that's the depth they experience when they're hibernating. So you can see that during the active season, their body temperature is just a little bit below 40 degrees Celsius. You see a lot of fluctuation, and that is associated with a daily rhythm of body temperature. And then the squirrel will enter hibernation. In this case, it's entering in early September. And you can see that when it drops down to really cold body temperature, we call that torpor. It's become torpid. And its temperature during torpor is the temperature of the soil. And it doesn't stay torpid for the entire hibernation, but instead it periodically warms back up to the more normal body temperature, so that 38, 39 degree body temperature. And people have been studying hibernators for years, trying to understand what the function is of returning to high body temperature, because energetically that's really expensive. They have to burn a lot of body fat to heat their bodies back up to that normal body temperature. And there's a variety of theories as to why they do this. One is that they need to regenerate glucose, because glucose, that sugar in your body, becomes depleted throughout a torpor bout. Another theory is that they need to do this to go to sleep and heal parts of their brain. If you look at this soil temperature slide, you see that the soil temperature line, the dashed line, you see that in kind of late November, early December, it starts to finally drop below zero. So that's the point at which that soil has finally become frozen, and then you can get very cold soil temperatures. So in this particular figure, you see a soil temperature that drops to as low as about minus 17, minus 18 degrees Celsius. But we've recorded soil temperatures as low as minus 26 degrees Celsius. So when the soil temperature drops that low, the squirrel body temperature can't continue to drop or they'll freeze solid and die. So they have to generate heat. And they do this using a special organ that's called brown adipose tissue or brown fat. And brown fat looks a lot like regular fat, but it's brown because it has lots of mitochondria, which are basically the body's way of generating energy through ATP. But in a hibernator, what you're seeing is they use this brown fat basically to generate heat. And so that brown fat heats the body, and they keep their brain warm and the rest of their body warm using that. And they are at a relatively constant body temperature, just slightly below zero, even though the hibernacula is much colder. And I think I'll give this back to Andre at this point.
Great. Thanks, Corey. So here we have another shot of a nice ground squirrel out active during the active period in the summertime. And, you know, a lot of what we're doing up here, a lot of the work basically involves catching some of these ground squirrels to do a whole variety of things. We've got about three or four different experiments going on simultaneously right now. And over the many years that this group has been working on ground squirrels, they've looked at lots of different things. But it all kind of comes down to being able to go out and catch the squirrels. So fortunately, they're pretty easy to catch. At least sometimes, not always when you really want them, but in general, we call them trap happy. They seem to just love to come back and get carrots, and they kind of know what's up. And they keep coming back for more, so I was kind of surprised that they don't learn, but they love those carrots. So here you can see us loading up our backpack, which we call the Schlepper. We're going to carry out a whole bunch of traps out into the field site. So we walk about a quarter of a mile or so and set the traps out there. And then we check them every little bit, like every hour or so, and see which squirrels we've caught and whether they're ones that we want to process. So we might give them an ear tag so that we can identify them, or we might bring them back. And one of the things that we need to do is draw a little bit of blood. We'll clip their toenail and draw some blood. And then they also are carrying a collar around their neck that detects light, and it records it. So we call it a light logger, and it records when they're active, basically outside of the burrow. Because when they're inside of the burrow, it's dark, so it records the time that they're in the darkness. And then when they come out into the sunshine, hopefully it's sunshine, not today, when they come outside, their light collar will detect what's going on outside, and it notes the time of day and how much time they spend out in the daylight. So we can get a good measure of their activity. Got another chart here that kind of shows males versus females. And they are a little bit different behaviorally because, of course, in the summer is when the females are having their offspring. And so if you look at these two charts, you can kind of see that their timing or their phenology is a little bit different. So in the males, they come out of the burrows after winter at the end of March. You can kind of see where the line changes to the dark squiggly line at point C on the lower graph. Early April, they basically come out of their burrows. Yeah, there we go. And then they're active pretty much for the whole summer from that point. And the females, they don't come out of the burrows quite so early. The males come out because they have to defend territories, and so they get in fights with other males and chase them away, and they defend an area and then mate with the females, and then the females go back into the burrows, is my understanding. Corey, you want to explain a little bit more about some of their behavior?
Yeah, so I'll just point out a couple things on this. So if we look at that point C, when the males come to high body temperature, they actually don't immediately start to be active on the surface. They spend another month, so no, that's point C, not point B. They spend a month on the surface, or in their burrow, before they emerge to the surface. And so they have to spend this month underground so that they can go through puberty and are ready to mate with females immediately upon the time that they emerge to the surface. They also do this so that they can put on body fat and protein so that they're really big and strong, because when they're defending these territories for access to females, they have to fight with other males. The point E on the figure just shows when females are giving birth. So females come to high body temperature, and then they get pregnant within a couple days. And then they have about a 30-day gestation period, and then about another 30 days of lactation before they wean the young. And then they fatten quite rapidly and go back into hibernation fairly early. So this female is going back in late August, and some females will go back into hibernation in mid-August. And this seems a little strange because there's lots of food available at that time of year, and the juveniles and the males are up feeding for a lot longer before they go back into hibernation. So overall, females end up hibernating for a lot longer than do males. So 8 to 9 months in a female versus 6-7 months in a male.
Thank you. Okay. So here's some shots of what we do out in the field. We're taking one of the squirrels out of the trap, actually, in the top picture. And then we put it into a little mesh bag and try and get some statistics on how it's doing, its health conditions. We weigh it. We measure the size of its head and keep that data just to kind of to gauge their condition. let's move on to the next one. And then out in the field, I mentioned that they carry this light logging collar, and it's got two little pins sticking out of it that we put these alligator clips on and actually download it, the data that's on the light logger, download it onto the computer right outside in the field. Hopefully it's a nice day when we're doing that, but it's a little bit tricky to get that all to work. And that recorder could record for a long period of time, I think up to a year's worth of data. And then that all goes into our squirrel database. let's move on to the next slide here. So then we take all of our information and samples back to the lab. And there's a whole bunch of stuff to do back at the lab. So we've been pretty busy the last couple of weeks. We record a lot of data out in the field on paper, and then we do the data entry, put it onto the computer database when we come back inside. We have about 7 captive squirrels right now that we're keeping for this phase shift experiment that we'll talk about briefly. And we're going to let them go next week after their circadian cycle has been altered. When we take blood samples out in the field, we need to do some blood sample preparation. And some of the squirrels at the beginning were implanted with these data loggers that measure their body temperatures. And that's how the graphs that we looked at earlier were generated, was by these body temperature data loggers. And then, of course, we have to get ready for the next day, because bright and early the next day, we're going to go back out to our field site and do it all again. Corey, could you tell us a little bit about the circadian rhythm experiment and our phase shifting?
Okay, so one of the big questions we have about Arctic ground squirrels is why they seem to be active only from about 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. So in the Arctic, unlike most places in the world, during the summer it's light 24 hours a day. And so this should offer a really good opportunity for animals to forage throughout the day, especially when they need to do energetically expensive things such as lactation. But we don't see this. They maintain a really strong circadian rhythm during the summer. So that circadian rhythm is this internal biological clock that all organisms have, including humans. And so some Arctic animals lose this organization during the Arctic summer when it's constantly light. Ground squirrels don't. And so we have an experiment that we're doing where we are altering the circadian clock in these animals by bringing them into captivity for a short time, about 15 days. And during that time, we treat them to a light-dark cycle such that they slowly shift their timing so they become active during the night period. And then we're going to release these animals right around summer solstice here, so when it's at its very lightest, and see if they have the capacity to re-entrain their circadian clock during the summer. And so you can think of this in human terms, that we're giving them really, really bad jet lag, and we're trying to see if they have the capacity to re-entrain their clocks in an environment that never has darkness. We're also interested in the energy associated with being active at the wrong time of day. So do they use more energy when they're active during the night phase, even though it's not dark, because it's slightly colder? And so the next extension of this experiment, which will probably happen next summer, is to compare phase-shifted animals to non-phase-shifted animals and see how much energy they expend each day.
Corey, is there any connections with this kind of research with humans? You mentioned jet lag, and what are some of the applications of understanding the behavior in squirrels and the circadian clocks in squirrels with other animals? And
That's a great question. So our work isn't exactly directly applicable to humans, and it falls kind of within this realm of basic science. And basic science doesn't necessarily have a direct applied usage, but it provides this body of knowledge that is really important to understanding our world and also to understanding humans. So almost all of the work that has happened in terms of circadian rhythms in mammals outside of humans happens in lab animals, which are rats and mice, and these are nocturnal animals. So the ground squirrel system is actually quite good because it's a diurnal animal, meaning they're active during the light part of the day, not during the dark part of the day. And so they can provide insight into how clocks function in humans. Obviously, a lot of the kinds of experiments that you can do on a ground squirrel, you can't do on a human. We can't bring a group of humans up into the Arctic and phase shift them and release them into the environment.
Isn't that what we're doing to ourselves?
Well, a little bit, but up here, if we didn't have clocks on the wall that we could look at, we would completely become out of phase with the environment. So ground squirrels are actually much better than us at knowing what time of day it is during the Arctic summer.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. So after we do all this work with them, then they get to go home. And so we take them back to the exact same burrow that we captured them at. So there's a lot of tracking exactly where the traps were set, and then try and return them back to their burrow as quickly as possible. Most of them are only away for an hour or so, and we release them, and they run back in their hole, and they're happy as pie. Then they'll try and get trapped the next day is what we're experiencing. But anyway, that's the way that goes. So that's really my last slide, and we can go to some of the questions. I see one question here from Mark Munger's class. Oh, we've got a live squirrel, that's right. Let's show the live squirrel first. I'll put the video on. And so we caught this squirrel yesterday, and we downloaded the data from its light collar. And I think the video will come up here in just a second. Yeah, there we go. It might take a second for it to take another picture of it. It's not exactly live, but the squirrel's live. Let's see here. I think we're going to get another image here. We've got the squirrel right in front of us here. I'm getting a message about video not responding, but we'll keep trying. Mark's class asks, what's the heaviest squirrel? And the squirrels that we've been weighing, they're about 600 to 700 grams, depending on if they're pregnant or how big they are. And so you can figure out how big 600 or 700 grams is.
Hey, Andre, this is Sarah. I just wanted to interrupt you.
We also catch the males earlier in the spring and late in the fall, so immediately before they go into hibernation. And they are substantially larger at that point of the season because they put on so much body fat. And we get males around here as heavy as 1 kilogram. And if you go further north from our site,
yeah, we're doing that. It might come on any minute. Anyway, go ahead, Corey.
So if you, not quite high enough.
I'll raise it higher.
So if you go further north from here, the squirrels become slightly larger, and so they'll be, 1.2, 1.3 kilograms even if you go really far north. And even though they're called Arctic ground squirrels, they have a pretty wide geographic range. And you'll find these same squirrels in the boreal forest of Canada, for example, although they tend to be smaller down there.
We've got a question. What's the warmest temperature of a squirrel? And do they ever attempt to scratch or bite? Actually, Corey can talk about the biting part.
So, yeah, when you're handling them, you have to be very careful. And last summer, for example, I wasn't very careful, and I got bit by a squirrel. And it hurts, and it bleeds if you do. And in my case, it became infected, and I had to take some antibiotics. We generally, when we're handling them, try and wear thick leather gloves that they can't bite through. And as for the warmest temperature of a squirrel, they'll get just around 40 degrees Celsius, is about as high as we see in terms of their body temperature.
There, we've got a squirrel on the screen there. He's in his cage because if we took him out, he'd be they don't like to be held too much when they're active. They're not like when they're hibernating. They're nice and docile. We had one get out the other day, and it was running around the lab. Kind of exciting. It looks like Jeanette has answered some of our good questions here on the chat, but I'm going to check and see if there's some others that we can address.
This is Sarah. Andrea, is Andrea want to ask you? Sorry.
So in respect to the body temperature, if we have Arctic ground squirrels during the summer,
it was quite delayed. My apologies. Andrea, if you want to ask a question live, just we can turn off Andrea.
What was that, Sarah?
You can ask that question live if you'd like to.
Did you guys have to get any special vaccines since you're working with animals?
That's a good question. We actually do not for Arctic ground squirrels, so they don't really carry any diseases that are known to infect people, although that's a really important consideration when you're working with animals. So most of the ground squirrels in general are pretty good at not having diseases that affect humans. One exception is a close relative of the ground squirrel, the prairie dogs, and they can actually get bubonic plague. And so that's one thing you have to consider when you're working with a population such as that, is to make sure that they don't have those kinds of diseases or that you're appropriately vaccinated. But fortunately for us, that's not a worry.
Well, that's good. I was kind of wondering about that, but I didn't ask. Anybody else have any questions?
Susan has one in the chat box.
That's basically all. The young are, right now, most of them were born right about this time, actually, maybe last week. They started giving birth, and so the females are lactating, meaning that they're producing milk in other mammals, and that's one of the characteristics of a mammal, is that most of them have fur, and they produce milk. And so the babies are down in the burrows, and they're developing, and they will come out of the burrows probably after about, 30 days after birth. And so sometime later in June, the young of the year will come out of their burrows, and hopefully I'll get to see some of those before I go home. But good question. I see a couple other, what's the weather like today? Well, it rained light drizzle all night, and I think it's going to start to snow, maybe. It's kind of a cold day. Yesterday was beautiful. The last 2 days were beautiful, though. So we had some really good days out in the field. So it's kind of up and down. But today, maybe we can take it easy a little bit. We'll see what the boss says. Anybody else have any questions?
Go ahead, Andrea. I'm sorry, did that go through? I was asking about the size of the litter and how much the pups weigh and if you work with them at all. Andre, your mic may not be on.
Okay, we'll try that. So that we don't really work with the pups directly. They're down in their burrows, and we try not to do anything with them. They're very tiny, hairless little babies when they're born, and then they gradually develop over that 30-day period when they're underground, and then they come out. But our experiment's not directly working with any of the pups.
Go ahead, Susan.
Okay, I have a student that's wondering about the temperature that the female squirrels are seeming to hibernate at a lot colder temperature than the males, and we were wondering about why that was. Thanks.
The body temperature of the females is higher than the males. I don't know. Is that correct, Corey?
So it could be just a slight difference between those two examples I showed, but typically their body temperatures during torpor, when they're at their coldest, is pretty similar in males compared to females. Now, early in the season, the females are hibernating at slightly higher temperatures, but that's because the soils are warmer and they haven't yet dropped down to zero at that point in the year.
We have a question in the text box from Mark.
We haven't seen any birds pick off squirrels yet, no, or go after any of the squirrels. When we first came in, we did see a golden eagle flying over, and I've been watching to see if it came back, but I haven't witnessed that. There's been a raven hanging around, and I imagine that the raven, they're pretty aggressive, and it might get one of the babies conceivably. But it's really not any threat for the adults. And so we haven't seen any predation on the ground squirrels as of yet, except for we did see a fox running right through the colony, and I'm sure that he was keeping his eyes open.
So in past years, I haven't seen this, but other people have seen ravens eat kind of newly emerged juveniles, so that when they're really young. But Andre's right about the adults don't really have to worry about the ravens. We also see northern harriers flying around, and I expect that they catch them, but we haven't seen that either.
Go ahead, Susan.
Hi,
did I get off of it?
Try again. Okay, her question is in the chat box.
So female ground squirrels will live, you know, 7, 8 years at the oldest. More typical is about 5 years. The males don't live nearly as long, partly because they bite with each other so much and they get a lot of wounds that way. And they're active for a lot more of the season, so they probably get eaten by predators a lot more. And so males typically, you know, 3 or 4 years, but we'll have, you know, the odd occasion where we get a 5-year-old male.
Mark has a question in the chat box.
We're not seeing a question from Mark right now, so you could write it again in the chat box if you have one.
This is Sarah. If I'm not being choppy, he's asking what other experiments are going on at your site?
There's a whole bunch of really neat research taking place up here. We share a lab with a group that's looking at bird biology, and I hope to get out with them sometime, but I think what they're looking at is right now the birds that have migrated into the area, and then they are starting to look at their nests and kind of their nesting behavior. They've got GoPro cameras on a bunch of their nests to kind of track them all day long to see what's going on and what species of birds there are, and I don't know the details of their research. There's a group looking at the soils and the permafrost. They're actually from Colorado State University. And one of the big issues up here is that if global warming causes melting, that permafrost stores a lot of carbon. And when it thaws out, it releases that carbon into the atmosphere. So it's a big source of excess carbon dioxide that can get released that's normally frozen, you know, and permanently frozen. So it would be a new source of carbon. So that's a lot of research is taking place related to that. There's groups looking at the rivers, the lakes, the plant phenology, the timing of springtime, again, that we talked about. So there's a lot of different projects taking place that are really interesting. Our camp has about 70 people here right now. And it will get even fuller as the summer progresses. And there are researchers from all over the world, and they come to Tulik because it's such an accessible location with good facilities and, you know, right in the Arctic. And so there's a lot of stuff happening here. So it's pretty exciting to be up here right now.
Andre, Well, I think we will wrap it up at this point and say thank you to the research team. And Andre, thanks so much for the presentation. There are lots of ways to continue working with Polar Trek, whether you are in the field or in the classroom. We will have upcoming events, so watch the website for more Polar Connect events from TULIC and other Arctic sites. And again, thank you so much to everyone. And I'm just seeing Janet said that Corey is still talking. I couldn't hear him. Go ahead, Corey.
Thank you, everybody, for visiting with us, and I hope you'll follow the blog and continue to find out about things that are taking place in the Arctic. And I miss it at home, and so take care back in Aspen.